The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Hyundai. Now offering 5 years free servicing on every new 142 Hyundai. Ireland's fastest growing car brand.
Go now to a man who, by God, has experienced fear of his own. And he's a kind of a hero, I think, in all of our eyes at this stage. And in his victim impact statement in the court this week, he says, all this happened. This is the maiming of one son, the murder of another son, the deprivation of children of a father, all of the consequences that happened. This was the Wayne Dundon gang, Dundon McCarthy gang case. And he said, all this happened because we did the right thing. We have paid the ultimate price for that. One child maimed, another murdered. We have to live in exile in a place where we know no one. And that, those are the words of Steve Collins, who has been through 10 years of hell. Steve, good morning to you.
Good morning, Marianne.
First of all, how are you?
Well, in a word, relieved. It's been a long road to get justice, but we achieved that for Roy, and it makes everything we did worthwhile. And I'm just happy for my family, who have lost so much, to get where we are today. It's a great feeling, and justice is served.
Because you did say also in that statement that your wife, Carmel, is a shadow of her former self.
Yeah, it's upsetting, like, you know, like that. When this comes into your life and how it can change your mood, everything, like illness comes into it, you know, you're not healthy, your health suffers over it, you know. There's a lot of things like that that can eat into your life, and she's not the same woman that she was before this, that's for sure.
Well, I presume none of you are the same people. Now, remind us, we'll go back over the story to remind people, but I was just thinking, the judgment this week took 2 hours to go through.
Yeah.
What was that like?
It was a roller coaster of ups and downs. During the reading of the verdict, we felt that Killeen would be guilty because of DNA, gun residue and CCTV footage. And the evidence against him was very strong. But with Dundon, with Wayne Dundon, on the other hand, it was not so clear-cut. Justice O'Malley disregarded a lot of the witness evidence from Garrett Collins and April Collins, and she was upset too about the stunt that Anthony Noddy McCarthy pulled in court. So we thought like that his evidence was ruined. Like, well, but in the end, in our summing up, she took his evidence to be credible.
Right. And to remind people of the stunt.
Yeah, like he was brought back into court because they didn't believe like that he could have a mobile phone and walk around freely around the prison with it. You know, so his idea was to come back in and to let them know that he could walk anywhere in the prison system. The McCarthy Dundons had this administrative role they played on a paint duty, which they didn't have to do any painting, but it gave them freedom to walk between all the landings.
Yeah.
And it looked as though they were running the prison, like, you know, but he came in then and to prove a point. Yeah, and I don't know how he got it in, but he stood up like under cross-examination from Remy Farrell over the fact that he couldn't have had a mobile phone at that time because he was due to meet the governor. And he stood up and went. He took this thing out of his pocket, like, which everyone thought.
In the court?
Like, in the courtroom, yeah. Everyone gasped, you know. It was just amazing, like, you know, how he had come out of the prison system through all the security and searches and come into the most secure court of the land, come through all the detection systems that they have there, through a number downstairs and a number upstairs before he gets into the court, and still was able to walk in with this thing, which everyone thought was a mobile phone. He was arrested shortly afterwards and searched, and they found what it was a remote control for his TV and his thing. But still, Justice O'Malley was very upset about this, like that something like this could happen in our court. And
but it goes to show you something, doesn't
it? Oh yeah, I mean they're brazen as hell, like, you know. And you know, I thought like by that though he was after ruining what he had given was, I thought, the best evidence of the whole lot, like. And
and his evidence really was what nailed Wayne Dundon.
Yes. I mean, like, he was there, and he was across from the landing on the same landing across from his cell, and he heard Wayne Dundon all of the hit on Roy, and got very agitated, and he afterwards, then after it was done, he jumped around with Desi, high fives like that. He warned me by tapping his wrist. I warned Steve Collins like that this would happen, like, you know. And I had already made a statement of the fact that while we were in court in Ryan's, when Ryan was shot and after he had done the threat, and that he was tapping his wrist and he was trying to intimidate me in court, and statements were taken at the time, and it proved to be significant, you know. And but I mean, if you had heard McCarthy's evidence, like, I mean, yeah, he had nothing to gain from giving evidence against Wayne Dundon. He was going against his first cousin, giving evidence against his first cousin, which had alienated him from the family completely. He had put his mother in danger outside because of it. He'd gone himself then from freedom of walking around the prison and doing what he wanted to 23-hour lockdown for his own safety. You know, he'd been classed as a jailhouse rat, and which was it's not a nice thing. He had to be moved from prison to prison because of it, and you know, he put himself in for a life of misery. Like, really,
why,
like,
do you think he did that?
I think, well, he said his conscience came at him. You know, I mean, he had nothing to do with that murder. He was in prison at the time, and he just felt as though he could have done something at the time because he knew what was going on, and he felt his conscience had awaited him, that he couldn't get word out to somebody to try and stop it. It was just too late then.
Right.
You know, and
because that's the second time that conscience comes in, because didn't one of them tip you off that you were a mark as well?
Yeah, that was another one of their henchmen being going back. They sent a letter, came out from prison. And
to
I
you.
Was to be killed. Yeah, no, it didn't come to me, but he got a hold of it, and he brought it up to me. It was encoded, but it was clear that I was to be shot for €75,000, and all details of my movements and the whole lot. Like, and also at the same time, it was just before the Shane Gagan murder that Pitchfork was classed as who was John McNamara, the intended target before they killed Shane Gagan. So what happened there was, they missed Shane Gagan, or they missed Pitchfork and got Shane Gagan. They killed the wrong man. They done the same in my case. They missed me and they got my son, you know. And but they don't care. There's no care there. There's nothing.
Yeah.
You know.
It was interesting that person warned you. I mean, because it's very hard to see goodness anywhere in this whole sorry story. But before we leave the prison, let's go back to this thing about the paint.
Yeah.
And what was actually happening in prison? And all these guys with telephones ordering murders.
Yeah, you know what I mean. This is something that has to be addressed now, because my son was murdered because of that they could facilitate themselves in prison with these phones.
What was the story with the paint duty?
Okay, well, the paint. See, they have to do these jobs inside in prison, and they couldn't enforce the McCarthy Dundons into doing anything because they were running the prisons at the time.
How do you mean running the prisons?
Well, they could walk through any landings, through any doors. They could stay there if they wanted. Like the other party, everyone else had to move on and do their daily chores. They didn't have to do it. So they use it as an administrative act that they put them down as the paint gang. You know, and the paint gang then could move between landings and blocks to meet their friends and what have you. And in the morning, you see, the system is in the morning. They're called at 8 o'clock and they're asked if they want breakfast. If they want breakfast, they come out and get it, and then they're locked back in their cells until 9:15. They come out then, and then they get ready. They meet on the landings, and then whatever jobs they have to do for the day, they go from there and go away and do their jobs. Now, because the Dundon McCarthy's were... Now, the cells would all be locked at that stage, you know? And then because the McCarthy Dundons were in the paint gang and administrators, they didn't have to move anywhere. They could stay there and they just get the wardens to open one of the cells. They go back into the cells and they sit down talking and planning stuff or whatever they'd done all day. They didn't have to go painting, you know.
So they were calling the shots in
prison? They were calling the shots in prison, yeah. They were running the prison system, you know. So I don't know whether it's true fear, the whole lot, like it was just trying to keep them quiet or whatever it was. Like, but they ran the system, you know.
I mean, it does beggar belief, doesn't it?
Oh, I mean,
I wouldn't be in favour of an inhumane system for one second.
No.
But Lord save us,
you know.
People with their track records calling the shots in the prison is a bit shocking.
It is shocking. I mean, I was shocked when I heard it. Like, and the part, and because it was a prison warder was called to give evidence to prove this, and he proved that it was true. That is exactly how it worked, you know. And that's the corroboration like that the justice like took like and took his evidence then as being credible, because everything he said about it, like the fact that he could move around, he was called back. McCarthy was called back that day when he took the phone out, because they wanted to prove, they had found out that he had a meeting with the governor at 10 o'clock that morning.
Yeah.
And Wayne Dundon also had a meeting at 10 o'clock that morning. And he thought like then that, well, if you went to see the governor, you're going to be up there for an hour. There's no way phone calls could be made at 10:30, you know?
Yeah.
And he says, you'd be brought up and you'd be put in a holding cell. And Anthony McCarthy stopped him and he said, well, it's not a holding cell, it's a medical cell. And I've never gone into that cell, not in all my time in there. He said, but you'd have to go there if you were called up if you wanted a meeting with the governor. He said, no. He said, I've never gone into that cell, and neither has Wayne Dunne ever gone into that cell. If I wanted to see the governor, I'd go up. If the door was open, I'd go in and straight and see him. If not, I wouldn't. If there was somebody in there, I'd give him what would be 2 to 4 minutes with the governor, and then I'd go straight in to see him. If not, I'd go back to my cell and I'd wait for him to call me, you know. But I wouldn't be hanging around no cell, he says, you know. So this just goes to show you, like, you know, and that was backed up then by the wardens. Like, so, you know, I mean, the kind of power that they had within the prison system was outrageous.
Staggering, yeah. Now, as you were sitting in the court listening to all of this, she threw out some, obviously, of Gareth Collins, discounted April Collins,
yeah.
Discounted another Collins. Did you for any moment at all think, dear Lord, could this not succeed?
Well, I mean, it was a roller coaster ride, like, really, like, you know. You know, there was ups and downs, like, during the reading of the verdict, the first, that Killeen would be found guilty because of the DNA, the gun residue, the CCTV footage, you know. And
yeah.
The evidence against him was very, you know, it was strong, like, you know.
Yeah.
But Dundon's, like, on the other hand, it wasn't so clear-cut, like, him after disregarding all these witnesses. And she was upset about the stunt with Nadia McCarthy,
yes,
that he had pulled, like, in court. So I thought, like, that it ruined his evidence, you know. So, I mean, it was getting very, very upsetting at that stage to be thinking that he was going to get away. But at the end of her summing up, like, she took his evidence to be credible, that he had nothing to gain from all this, like, only misery.
And why did she throw out the other evidence?
April Collins, it wasn't significant enough to make any kind of a difference. And indeed, she felt then like that if the family of the Collinses were kind of trying to get time added on to Wayne Dundon's, you know, keep him in prison because of their own thing, that they had something to gain by it all, you
right,
know. So
yeah.
It just wasn't safe enough. She felt that even though some of it she thought was credible, most of it wasn't safe enough that she could use it, like, you know. And so she threw it out. I mean, it's probably better that she did, like, because you don't want these people coming back getting away on some silly appeal, like, you know.
That's right, because at one stage after he had been sentenced, it went back to the Court of Appeal and his sentence was reduced.
Yeah. Well, that's it. Like, I mean, he got 10 years for threatening to kill Ryan, and he got it reduced to 7 years, you know, so because he just felt it was a bit harsh, you know, so I don't know.
Do you feel safe?
Well, I do today, no, Marion, to be honest, because, you know, I haven't up to now, like, you know, but it was a tough thing to have to go away from your home and that, like, to try and get.
Yeah, just in case there's anybody that doesn't remember what happened to you, you had a fine, thriving business.
Yeah.
Your business was wiped out.
Wiped out.
You were advised by us, so to speak, or those representing us, that you wouldn't be safe in Ireland. So you had to leave the country against your wishes.
Yeah.
In order to go into a protection programme.
Well, you had to make that decision. You see, my life had changed so much, like, Marianne, that I was being followed by two armed Gardaí. My two sons had two armed Gardaí following them on. I was going around in bulletproof vests. I mean, the list of things like that happened to us, like, I mean, the murder of Roy, the maiming of Ryan, you know, I mean, I thought Ryan was going to die that day. He was so badly, people forget that, like that. that guy came in, shot him in the knee and blew his knee away nearly, and then came back and shot him again and left him for dead, like, you know. So how he survived that, like, and it has been very, very tough, like, you know, I mean, to kind of get him through that psychologically, like, you know. But and then they burned down our pub, you know, Brannigan's, burned it to the ground, destroyed that business, you know. They burned down an investment house close to it, like, you know, and shortly after that, like, you know. And they tricked us into a trap, which I told you the last time. I remember when they baited me to follow them up the road, like, and a gang attacked us then, like, you know. They put pipe bombs at the back of our other pub, you know, which scared our other customers, like, and, you know, it just destroyed the business, like, you know. I mean, we had a constant run of dry runs of coming into the pub, you know, and running out, just checking the response of the Gardaí, you know, to see where they on the ball, like, you know, watching us, like, you know. You know, sending kids up on BMX bikes and skidding outside the front door, like, just because you were standing there, just to intimidate you. You know?
And when you say kids, you mean kids?
Oh, I mean kids, yeah. I mean, they had all these little 12-year-olds, like, you know, going around on bikes, but, you know, intimidating you, like, stopping and then going under their saddle and then getting back. You just don't know what they have, like, you know. And so it does, it scares you. Like, I was more afraid, to be honest with you, of those kids coming up to me than I was of ever Wayne Dunne coming near me, like, you know.
Really?
Really, I was, yeah, because I know the way they put their arms around these vulnerable kids. Like, I mean, they're coming from poor areas, like, and they haven't seen much, and the likes of Wayne Dunne then putting his arm around him, saying there's a life of bling, and you do this and you become a member. And I mean, they're so easy to turn them, like, you know. And these kids can go around in a group of eight bikes, and they come up, it's very intimidating, like, you know, it really is, like, and that's the way we had to do it. Like, they'd park the cars outside the front of the entrance of the pub and flashing the lights, and they'd buy food then, you know, and they'd leave it in the car, and it's in a public car park, and, like, and they'd be sitting there, and the guards wanted to move on, but they said, oh, look, we're at the buying a meal, we're just eating our meal, like, but they're not, they're there just to intimidate me, like, you know. And then they dug a grave for me, just a couple of hundred yards away from the thing that I know was for me, like, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, as you go through this, Steve, I mean, they, in a sense, ran rings around society, for want of a better word.
Yeah.
And society couldn't protect you.
Well, that's just it, like, Mary, I had to trust the system, I had to trust the justice system, like, I mean, you know, when my son was murdered, like, you know, I mean, it was the last straw, like, with them. I'd gone through all the intimidation with him before, after Ryan, and when they murdered Roy, that was the final straw with me, like, I mean, and there's nothing else, I mean, like,
did you ever regret that evidence was given first time round?
No, if you'd have to understand, like, you have to look at your child after being shot twice and left for dead, you know. And you just don't walk away from something like that. Like, I mean, no father would. Like, I don't believe, you know, other people might have words that go away and do something silly themselves, like, you know what I mean? But if you want to keep it right, like, you know, there's no way you'd ever, and I think every father would do the same thing, if they seen what I seen that night, you know what I mean? Looking at my son on the ground, almost bleeding to death, you know. So, lucky to save him, left him physically
damaged,
yeah, you know, and he'll carry the scars the rest of his life. Psychologically, he'll probably never get over it. Like, and then when you see that, like, you have to make a decision then that you go then, and you do that. Like, you hope that nothing else would ever happen to you. You know what I mean? And you know, that's all you can do is hope. Like, but
yeah, and I must remind people that in one of the cases against him, the jurors chickened out.
Yeah.
Presumably because of intimidation, and in fairness, Dermot O'Hearn, Minister for Justice, changed the rules on that one so that it went into a different court. Tell me, what was it like? I know that, I don't wish to do anything that would put you in any danger. What was it like going away, and what was it like living away?
Well, it was heartbreaking, to be honest with you. It was heartbreaking. Having to make that decision to leave all your family and your friends. See, if you want to do something like that, Marion, and you feel as though you want to emigrate, and maybe there's a better life for you somewhere else, and all the family are up for it, like, you know, well, maybe then. But there's not one of us wanted to go away, you know, but we felt we had to go away. If we were going to repair in any way, we'd have to go away, you know, and we'd have to kind of try and see, can we rebuild our life somewhere else, like, without this hanging over us. And it was the toughest thing to do, to move away, like, you know. You know, we'd always hope to get back someday, like, you know. Moving away, it's helped us with the grieving process. It's given my family like time to recover away from the constant security measures in place from us, you know, and for that reason alone, it was worthwhile. But it's not home. And when you're forced to go away, it's not positive. You know, it's not a positive feeling. So getting there, getting home is always on your mind. So if everything settles down and the Gardaí and our security people say it's okay, we'd love to come home and start again.
Would you?
Yeah, but that's up to them. Like, that's up to the security people to tell me that, like, you know.
Yeah. Because presumably financially you were destroyed as well.
No, I'm wiped out. Wiped out, like, you know. All the hard work I've done all my life and the family have done all our lives. We built up thriving businesses and everything has been taken from us now. And I've got to start all over again, you know, and try and, you know, try and just rebuild everything. And it's going to be tough, like, you know.
Sure is.
You know, it's going to be tough, like, you know.
I know that the government gave you some compensation for the pubs, but I don't know if that was adequate as far as you were concerned.
No. I mean, nothing will ever pay you for what I mean. You know, at the time when I was compensated, like, I mean, property prices had dropped to nothing, you know, and it was taken at value. Like, I mean, I've got nothing other than the value of my properties, which I ended up having to pay off mortgages. By the time you do all that kind of stuff, Marlene, there's very little left, like, you know, to kind of to go away with, like, you know.
Yeah.
And businesses up to that have been destroyed, like, you know.
Yeah.
You have to remember, like, when people were afraid to come in, I had a thriving pub, two thriving pubs, one burnt down, which stopped trading, which by the time any settlement came for me to go away, like, I mean, I'd gone 5 years out there with mortgage payments when the place closed down, you know, all that kind of stuff, like, you know, and that put us under terrible, head up any financial we had, like, you know, and then you had the steering wheel then, like, and you had people putting pipe bombs behind and people afraid to come into the pub because
naturally
of the situation, you know, and it was terrible, you know, and it eats into it, it puts you under terrible pressure, you know, but it is what it is, you know, I just had to try and, as I say, try and rebuild it. But it's tough. It's very, very hard being away, like, you know, at my age. I mean, when you think that you have everything sorted in your life and you're at a stage where your sons can take over and you just take a back seat, like, and then all of a sudden this is all taken away from you then. That's a tough thing.
It sure is. And, I mean, would you feel safe? I mean, would you feel safe if... I mean, how will you ever know what level of communication is going on with these blooming mobile phones in the in the prison? Because, as I also understand, you went up from 75,000 to 200,000 to 500,000 to kill you.
Yeah. Well, you see, he's seen me as a major threat to him now. You know, I mean, at the time, I was just a nuisance to him. I had put him away, and he's coming near the end of his sentence. But when this all started back again, and he knew, like, then, like, that I was going to be appearing again against him in court and that, and it was still going to go ahead, he'd have done anything to stop that, you know. But like, the McCarthy Dunnans are nothing now. They're finished. You know what I mean? The gang is gone.
Are you confident of that?
Oh, I am, yeah. I listen to the Gardaí, and that gang are gone now. There's nobody there. They'll never get out for a lifetime now. And there's got to be new kids on the block now that'll take over.
You know, I was just talking over the last couple of days about the ordinary decent people that live around there. Their lives must have been terrifying too. I mean, trying to rear your kids and keep them out of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's shocking. Like, I mean, I seen it with my own daughter. She was 18 when this happened to Roy. And when she couldn't go out and all her friends were going into town and she couldn't go and socialise with her friends at 18 years of age, like, you know, that shocked me, you know. That's the way our life had changed. But I've seen it then with other people. And they were afraid to let their kids go into town. They were afraid of these gangs, that what they were doing around town, the way they were acting, the way they were causing trouble. And there was, it's all these little minions like that went under the umbrella of being a member of the McCarthy Dunnan gang that were terrorising people and extorting people for this, that and the other. Like, and the kids going into town were scared, you know. And the parents were scared when their kids were in town. And it was just, this fear went right through the city. Like, I mean, they took over the city.
Why did they succeed?
I don't know. I really don't know how they became so powerful. Like, but it's just like, you see, it has to go back to all these areas that they built down in Limerick. Like, when you build areas like South Hill and Moy Ross, and you put no facilities in, you know, and you have all these kids down with nothing to do,
yeah,
and nothing, nowhere to go, and they're hanging around, like, and it's easy for these guys to pull up in a flash BMW and throw three of them in the back of the car, bring them away, and within a couple of weeks they have them on their side, like, and then you go up and pull another tree in and another tree in, and they've got this huge big gang, like, that they have runners running around the place for them, like, you know, and they became vicious. Like, people were genuinely afraid of these were the most vicious gang that Ireland has ever seen, you know.
Yeah.
And this is what I hear this from the Gardaí, and I hear it from the Gardaí in Dublin and all that. None of them put up with the kind of stuff that the Limerick Gardaí had to put up with these people, you know. Yeah. They were just outrageous, you know?
I mean, I absolutely take your point about the deprivation and the dreadful housing things, you know, but you know, families and generations were reared in tenements with nothing.
Yeah.
And they were decent people doing the best for their kids. Do you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, but the vast majority of the people in, yeah, South Hill and Moy Ross and Weston are wonderful, lovely people, you know what I mean? I ran a business up there and I had lovely people, beautiful people coming into me, you know.
Yeah.
But it's just, as I say, that there's a few families like that, you know, are going through tough times, and the kids are let run around the road, and they're just picked up by these people, and,
yeah,
and the families are destroyed over it then.
Mind you, to go back to the 500,000, he clearly has an awful lot of cash. I gather he doesn't smoke or drink or do drugs himself.
Well, that's what they say, but I mean, I don't know really what that is like, but I mean, they say that, like, but I'm sure he has. He had a huge drug empire going. I mean, at the time, he'd one of the biggest drug empires going, and I'm sure there's money stashed away somewhere for these threats, like, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, the sickening things coming out, like, now, like, I mean, which sickened me during the week, like, about the fact that they were going to dig Roy's grave, dig him up, and all this, like, I mean, I thought,
pardon?
That was outrageous. On the paper this week, like, now, there was threats supposed to be made last year that they were going to dig Roy up and put his remains somewhere else, like, to upset me, to put me off going to court and all that, like, you know. But I mean, that doesn't help the family. I mean, I hate when stories like that come out in the paper, because it doesn't help my family, like, you know.
Yeah.
And if it's kind of glorifying what they are, I don't know, like, but that kind of story really, really upsets people like us, like that. That you have to look at that kind of stuff and it sets you right back. It sets karma back, and it just, it's not nice. I mean,
it might
sell a few papers, like, but that's bad, you know. There's no need for it.
And how are Roy's kids?
Well, they're getting on with it now. You
yeah.
know, they're kind of growing. They're starting to grow, and they're starting to kind of get. They're really close to us, like, and we look after them, and you know, and. But they'll never get over the daddy.
Right.
You know, they'll never.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got that, as I say, like, as I said in the witness.
Yeah, and I just, I just must remind people, this was merely, you had nothing to do with this at all. This was merely because Ryan said when the law changed that the 14-year-old girl couldn't go in after 9:30 into the pub.
That's correct. I mean,
that was all.
That was it. I mean, we never knew Wayne Dundon. I heard about Wayne Dundon, but I never met him. I never knew what he was like. I never knew what any of the Dundons were like, or the McCartys. But at the time, new legislation came in, and that you couldn't have a child in a pub after 9:00. And this was kind of very, very new, you know?
Yeah, I remember it.
And at the time, all the staff were briefed on it and told, look, be very, very careful who you're serving and make sure that nobody comes in. Roy was only doing what he was told to do. He came up with a 14-year-old to get the 14-year-old girl in, and his mother was, seemingly, her mother was inside, or not her mother, his sister was inside, and he wanted just her to join the sister at a party, you know?
Yeah.
And Ryan refused, and he got very annoyed and threatened Ryan, told him he was going to kill him, you know? And within 29 minutes, a motorbike pulled up outside. He walked straight in, straight into the lounge, back around into the bar, came behind. Ryan was pulling the point, and he shot him in the knee. He tried to get out then over the counter, and I ran towards him. I was outside the counter collecting glasses at the time, and I ran over towards him. He jumped back in, and as he passed by Ryan was lying on the ground, and he shot him again, you know? So he ran around and got out through the lounge and jumped out, and I ran out then after him. I went to grab him and I cut the back of his jacket, like, and he shot at me and a whistle passed my head, you know, I'm stuck in the wall, you know. It was just mad, you know. So this is the kind of people you're dealing with now, you know.
Right, well, listen, I wish you the very, very best. I wish your wife the very best. I wish all your family the very best. And I think that you had wonderful, wonderful courage. And I know you were glad that there was a demonstration in Limerick where people came out. And presumably those people were afraid too.
Oh, yeah. Well, you see, I'd like to thank a few people about that. Like, you know,
sure.
I want to thank the Gardaí and the security people, you know, for all their dedication and the efforts that they have made. Like, you know, and they were wonderful to us, especially Jim Brown and Dave Sheen. We were fantastic, like, you know. The Dermot Ahern and Willie O'Dea for listening to us and doing something about the problem.
Yeah.
With the introduction of the 2009 Justice Act. We can see now that it's working, you know. And so thank you for that, like, you know. And to my wife and children, the brave ones, who always trusted everything I did. They knew how much of them. So,
yeah.
Look, and also the people of Limerick, you know, and the country who supported the march that time, you know. None of this would have ever been possible without their help. So thank you to everyone there.
Well, now, can I just read you out a couple of calls? One says, what a brave man, Marion. An inspiration to us all. God bless him and his family. And that came from Yvonne. And somebody else saying, how long do we all have to endure the suffering caused by these people? Love, hate is normality to so many of these criminals. Think of all the people who have been affected by it. Marion, there would be a good case to be made for something to acknowledge what Steve has done for Ireland. A hero for the Irish Republic Award for Steve for his selfless service to the Irish people and the state and much more besides. Somebody else saying Steve Collins should be honoured by the Irish state and given a pension for service to the state. So you can be assured that there is an awful lot of respect and admiration for you and indeed for your family out there. Steve, listen, I wish you well. I hope you can get home, but I presume you'll have to go on the advice as given to you. And I hope you get a bit of peace and quiet.
Listen, thanks very much, Marion.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very, very much indeed.
Podcast The Marion Finucane Show at rte.ie/radio.